We are at the second part of Cycles of Anarchy now, with in a section where we're learning Shmuel El Beis, Perek Prakim Beis to Dalet. And what we're going to do is we're going to just focus each year, each time we learn together around one particular issue. Today we're going to focus a particular incident which occurred, and that incident is going to be very instructional, instructive in understanding everything that happens afterwards. So context is just to remind us of where we stand. At this point in time, Shaul HaMelech, the United King of Israel, has passed away, or has been killed, essentially. And now, in the void, we see two kingdoms emerging. There's the kingdom of essentially Ish-bosheth and what he calls all of Israel. But there's a cessation, which happened beforehand, from the union, which is David HaMelech and Bnei Yehuda. So there's two kingdoms which are emerging. This should make us start smelling, already, future splits, right? So even though we're going to have unity, but already we can see that cessationists and the idea of moving away from the union is something which is going to be quite easy later on. So this is where we're at, and it's into this context that the following incident happens. We're going to deal with one incident tonight. That's called the game by the pool. Okay, this is if anybody asks you, where do you see sports in Tanakh? Here is the starting point for it. Okay, so it's a story we're no doubt familiar with. But let's try to dig our teeth into it. So we're going to do the following. There's the Psukim packet, and then there's also the Mepharshim packet. So we're in the Mepharshim packet, it's 2.2, game by the pool. And then we're in the Psukim, we're going to be moving over here from the Psukim Peri Beis, Yud Beis to Yud Zayin. It's the next little section. This section is called the wrestling match. So here's how it goes. This is study the match itself. And then come back for a few questions. So we're told, "Vayetze Avner ben Ner, v'avdei do ish boshes ben Shaul mi machanaim give honor." So we know that Avner, who is the general and really the right hand man, then of Shaul and now of ish boshes, goes with his men to this place in Givon, from Machanaim to Givon. V'Yoav ben Tzruya v'avdei David yatzu v'yatzu, and Yoav the son of Tzruya and the servants of David come leave Vayifka Shum Abrechas Givon Yachtav, and they meet by the pool of Givon together, Vayashuvu Eile Alabrecha Mizeh, Veile Alabrecha Mizeh, and they congregate. Some on the one side of the pool, others on the opposite side of the pool. Vayomer Avner El Yoav. Yoavner says to Yoav, Yakumu Nohana Arim Vyisachakula Fonenu. Let the soldiers get up and have a game. Vayakumu, and they did get up. Vayavru b'mispar shnei masar leBinyamin uleish boshes ben Shaul u'shnei masar me'avdei David. 12 arose from the Binyamin faction and 12 arose from the David faction, and they start wrestling. Vayachziku ish barosh re'eu, so the one, you know, they would grab the head of the other man, so it's obviously some sort of wrestling match. Vacharbo betzad re'eu, but they're still wearing their swords. Vayaplu yachdov, and they started, you know, falling because, you know, they're wrestling with each other. General rule in wrestling is don't wear weapons when you're wrestling. It's like sort of the wrestling 101. But they do not put down their weapons, Tanakh is telling us. And they call this place that they're wrestling the division of the rocks, or in Givon, which could obviously mean more than just the rocks divided. It could be the division of people as well. And Team Binyamin is not doing so well. Team Binyamin is being won by, we don't know how severe a word Vayinagef means at this point, but they're being bettered by the team of David. This whole thing is a very perplexing situation. So first of all, let's just get clear to clarify the characters for a second. So the leaders of each side, Avner we've met. Avner is of course, just to recap, he's the uncle of Shaul HaMelech, and he is essentially he was his general, and has been the one who put Ish-bosheth, the son of Shaul HaMelech, onto the throne. So he's clearly representing the northern, or the Binyamin kingdom. And on the other side is Yoav ben Tzruya. Who is Yoav ben Tzruya? So he is almost the equivalent.
He's also a relative, right?
He is also somehow related to David through Tzruya. He is David HaMelech's right-hand man. So as we go through the rest of Shmuel, we're going to see that Yoav is going to actually act as the general of David. So they really are the parallel individuals. And it'll be interesting to notice that they also act in parallel passion for their masters, sometimes to the negation of their masters. It's interesting to compare how Yoav also will do things which will make David very concerned later on. But nonetheless, these are the two leaders. And the suggestion is made. So let's, before we get to the suggestion of the Sfat, this brecha. A brecha literally means like a pool. And a number of archaeologists think they've identified where this pool is. So we know where the area of Givon is. There's actually a picture of it. Some archaeologists on the steps down. It's a large, large pool. It's a well, but the cistern goes in such a way that there's a circular staircase down to it. So you have to like really go all the way down. It's a very large pool. We're not talking about a small pool. Where is Givon? Where is Givon in Israel today? So if you take a look at the Mefarshim packet over here. Let's just see if I can show you. Here we go. Take a look. It's hard to see, but in the bottom darker area in the map on page 4 is Jerusalem, right? You can see that over there. If you move a little north of Jerusalem towards the center of the page, it says Givon or Gibeon. Okay, do you see that? It's just below Givat Zev, sort of below Ramallah, right? So it's in the area of North Jerusalem. Okay. So that's where it is. We know where it is. It's called by its biblical name today. And the question just to worthwhile thinking about is whose territory are we in? Givon is in whose territory? So it is interesting. Jerusalem is the dividing place between Yehuda and Binyamin, which means north of Jerusalem is whose territory? Binyamin. So it is important to notice that who are the intruders over here? Is David. Okay, it's just worthwhile thinking about it. Although Tanakh phrases it as Avner leaving Machanaim to go to Givon, almost as if he's making the incursion, really Givon is in the territory of Binyamin. So it's worthwhile thinking about who, you know, when you talk about aggression, it's very, very hard to pinpoint this because depending on what the media feels like at the time, you know, wherever you start the story, because you can, you know, dub the new aggressor. But it just depends where you start the story, right? So is the movement to the pool the act of aggression? Is it the game that's the aggression, right? We have to think to ourselves, how do we really understand the story? Gedina.
Furthermore, Givon was the birthplace and the family place of Shaul.
Is Shaul from Givon? I'm trying to remember. I think it might be Givon. You should not give A?
Yes, I checked.
Okay, so it is? Okay, because it's in Shaul. One second. Shmuel Aleph Perek Ches. Thank you, Dina. So that's what I want to make just see how does it introduce Shaul HaMelech? It's in.
Also, on another thing that I was that the Aaron Edut was in Gibeon.
Yes, it was there. That is true. That was also what is important
so
about that.
One is important because it has all those.
It does. So what's interesting about also is that the Aaron was there. Is that that's almost a way station between the destination of Shiloh, which is the children of Yosef, and Yerushalayim, which is the children of Yehuda. So, Okay, I don't see it right now. Okay, I'm going to look into that a little more. Just there's the Har Ephraim. Okay, I want to take a look more into that. But it is interesting over here. For me, it's just interesting that really Yoav is in Binyamin territory at this point in time. You know, when the media starts talking about Israel, you know, Israel's terrible aggression against these poor innocent Palestinians strolling by the fence, innocently on their daily errands, right? Well, that's one way of describing it. But the point is that they're all coming in there with tires and bombs and arson and like, you know. So yeah, it just depends how you describe at which point is the act of aggression. Now, why specifically the brecha? So it is interesting to notice that the Mamloes says on this section in Tanakh, he says, you know, it's interesting, maybe. This has to do with the fact that this is really just a very public place, right? So for instance, we're going to see later on in Perek Dalet that in the source packet, in this is source 12, we see that David commands that there's two people who need to be executed. These are traitors to the king, and he has them executed where? He had them executed by Zlu ala Brecha beChevron. So where did he hang them? He hanged them by the Brecha, by the pool in Chevron, because if you want people to notice things, that's where the billboard goes, right? So the pool is obviously a very public place. So the fact that these people are coming, that he is coming to the waterhole and to the well, is obviously this is the juncture. This is the nexus of meeting places, which sort of gives another dimension to it.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Sure.
In this time, Were they aware of Hebron being the burial place of the...
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. In fact, you'll notice that that when Caleb goes into the land of Israel, that's the piece of land he demanded or requested, because that's where he went to daven. So already from the time Yeshua walked in and the time that the Meraglim was sent, they knew for sure. So this is a lot of schus avos. In fact, if you were to ask people at this point in time, where is the holiest site in Israel, they would probably say either Hebron or Shechem. Right, because Hebron is the burial place, and Shechem was the first place where Yaakov actually bought a field. Shechem is the north, and Hebron is the south. So these are also bastions of the two parts of the kingdoms. But right now, Yerushalayim is not a known entity at this point. So Hebron is a very, very significant place, and you can imagine why David's seat of power is very firmly entrenched. Why are they playing this game? What is going on with this this game? Like, meaning, is this playful? Is this not playful? Are they at war right now? Do we know of any war between the north and the south, between Binyamin and Yehuda? Have we seen anything? Not necessarily. Right now, the Pesukim have not let us know that there's a war. In fact, you may read it that this incident is what actually catalyzes war. Okay, so up till now, things are kind of tenseness. We have two kings, one nation, different tribes, but things are kind of, like, you know, diplomatically very tense and quiet. But there's no outbreak yet. So what's going on over here? So there's a few suggestions which are made. One suggestion, which is made, the Maamar Ha'ez again makes a suggestion. He says, let's go back to an incident which occurred in Shmuel Aleph to appreciate what's happening here. In Shmuel Aleph, we had this fellow whose name was Goliath. He was a rather large individual, and he gets up on the mountain every day. And what was his thing? He started cursing the God of Israel. And he essentially said, just take a look on the top of the next page, on page 5, he says, Vayamod vayikro el ha-ma'arachot Yisrael. He went and called out to the battle stations of Israel. Vayamod lohem, lomo teitzu la'aroich milchomo. Why do you wage war? Halo enochi ha-plishti va'atem avadim l'shol. I'm the Philistine, you're the servants to Shol. He's beckoning to the nation. Beru lochem ish v'yirad elai. Choose for you a man and come down to me. What's he essentially saying? He's challenging them to a duel. He's throwing down the gauntlet, which could be whether he's calling a bluff or not. Not clear, just externally. But what is he saying is, he's basically making a deal. He says, why do we need to go to fight? Why do we need to kill each other and waste all our time and our human capital? Here's the easy way to do it. We'll make it one wrestling match. You, me, and somebody else, you choose who it is. Whoever wins will be the upper hand. So this way we lose less people, and then whoever wins will be the tax overlord. Very good option. Now it happens to be he has the distinct advantage over here, just by his sheer size, which is why nobody goes out there, right? But maybe, says the Maamar Ha'ez, maybe that's what's going on over here. Maybe what's happening over here is that they're saying, well, let's set up, you know, a wrestling match, so to speak, as rather than, we know that the tenseness is here, so let's see who wins the wrestling match. Maybe that'll give us a clue. Maybe we can learn from that who should really be the dominant force over here without having to go to war. Which then sort of, you know, elevates the stakes of this wrestling match. We can understand why they took it very seriously, maybe too seriously, if we're thinking about it from this perspective, just from this knowledge. The Chida takes it one step further. Listen to how he suggests. He says it's not just sort of a duel which is going to help us. In Saul 13, he says the following: Yakumu Naharim, Naharim, let the lads get up. Avne rotza lakachas ze l'siman ki David nimshach lemelech al Yehuda v'ishboshes al Yisrael uvaze yivoda lemi no'e hamlucha. He says it's not necessarily just about a duel. It's actually a sign. How's a sign more than a duel? What do you think he means by l'siman? Hashem wants. Okay. Right, exactly. Maybe we can work out what Hashem wants by the outcome of this. Meaning, the Maamar Ha'ez's suggestion was simply you know, very, you know, an astute military decision. Right? Let's just work, you know, we'll you know, have a thumb war, so to speak. You know, we'll work out, you know, best out of three. But no, he's saying, no. Whoever wins this is a sign that God is with them, and that's the real Malchus. Lakach, and that's why he says, Bachar yud beiz na'arim mikol tzad yirmoz shekol kat ha'omeres she'adon shelo yimloich al yud beiz shvatim. Why do they choose 12 on each side? Because they are essentially, this is the sign who has dominion over all 12 tribes. They're not just, it's not a Binyamin representative and a David representative, because that would be a regular duel. It is who has dominion. And that's what Avner is suggesting, whether to minimize casualties or to see a sign from God, which is going, which is happening over here. So this is the way it's supposed to go, but unfortunately, it doesn't seem to work out so well because it turns a little more sinister in just a moment. So here we go. Let's return to the text for a moment. By the way, I apologize. The first idea about this, the idea of the duel, is not the Mamnoes. It's Rav Yehuda Kiel, who is the editor of the Da'at Mikra Tanakh on this episode. That's what his suggestion was in the previous thing. Okay, so let's go into what happens afterwards. The next section we're going to go from Yud Ches to Chav Gimel, and this is what happens afterwards. Yeah, sure.
Who gives Avner ben Ner the authority? I mean, here we had Shmuel, so he was a Navi.
Right.
And all of a sudden, we don't have anybody who is leading or saying anything.
You're right.
And all of a sudden, comes Avner ben Ner, and he decides this is what God wanted. We knew the prophecy about Shaul we discussed last.
Yeah, you're right,
and
you're right.
All of a sudden, he's appointing, and he's like...
Yeah, you're right. I think that we, you know, a lot of the leadership over here... In the void
of
leadership, we are watching different forces jockeying for power.
It seems like the army is taking over.
Right, exactly. It's almost like the military, and we're going to see how David HaMelech is going to rein this back in, because on his side, too, the military is going to take too much of a lead. Okay, and we see this in all the time, you know, Lahavdil. We see this in many countries when there's instability. Last week I mentioned, like in South Africa, but whenever there's instability, you know, the military police walking in is not a good sign, right? That means to say, like, a state of emergency and emergency powers and no accountability. Those are dangerous things, right? That this is kind of what's happening over here. Well, let's just do it right now. We'll sort it out one time. Right, but it wasn't, and perhaps that's exactly what Tanakh is, the subtext of what Tanakh is questioning. And as we see, it's not going to turn out right. So here's what happens. So turns out that they're losing the battle. The north is losing. Binyamin's losing. And what happens? Vayihi Yusham. So let's focus on the psukim and then come back to questions. Vayusham Shlosha b'nei Tzruya Yoav Avishai v'Asael. We have the three sons of Tzruya. Their names of Yoav, Avishai, and Asael. We've met two of them. We've met Yoav and Avishai. We haven't met Asael so much up till now. And Asael is very light of foot. He's a very fast runner. And he starts running after Avner. So now we already know, by the fact that the psukim have changed scene already, we know that Binyamin is in retreat. So the match has not gone well, to the point that they're actually fleeing. And while they're fleeing, Asael takes the lead of trying to catch Avner. He turns around and he says, "Is that you, Asael?" And he says, "That's me." They obviously know each other. He says, "Do me a favor. Find somebody else to chase. Take one of the other, but we're all running. Take somebody else and do what you need." But Asael was not taking the bait. He carried on running after him. He says, don't carry on following me. Don't make me kill you. If I have to kill you, how am I going to speak to your brother anymore? Right, obviously, everybody knows each other here. He refused. He carried on running after Avner. So what Avner does is he rams the spear back into him. And it goes through, the Chomesh sounds like the fifth, we're going to get into what that is. And it comes through, or goes straight through Asael, and he dies immediately. When everybody sees the dead, the corpse of Asael, and then the pursuit sort of stops, grinds to a stop at this point. So just a few things to think about when looking at this really tragic event. We have to go into the psychology of everybody here. What is Asael doing? Why is he gunning down Avner? Why is that so important to him?
His father's the general, and he wants to impress him in the battle.
Okay, so he's trying to impress his brother Yoav, as maybe this is the way to do this, right?
He's the youngest.
Oh, you're saying maybe he needs to show his medal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, very, very possibly. Very, very possibly. It could also be. It could also be that. Let's go with the Ichida's suggestion. If this was to be a sign as to who's going to win, and now the wrestling match was clearly won by David's side, so maybe there's a window of opportunity now to go up against a much more formidable warrior than yourself. Remember, Avner is one of the most adept warriors at the time, the other one being Yoav. These are terrifying people, right? These are people who have been into battle numerous, numerous times. So Asael is not as initiated as Avner. He thinks maybe, says the Chida, that right now is the window of opportunity because look at what's just happened. Maybe now I have my moment, even though I'm not matched with him, because this is a very silly, a very dangerous choice that he's making by chasing him down. Another thing that Mamlo'ez also suggests over here, maybe he has a rationale. Maybe he thinks that actually Avner is liable for this. Why should Avner be liable? What liability does he have on him, or culpability rather, that he believes that he should kill him?
Not that he instigated the wrestling match.
He started the match, so it might be the starting of the aggression, so to speak. Could we even go back to that before? Remember we learned last week that Avner was the one who kept on saying to Shaul, fight David, chase David. Right? And when David makes himself a king, then what does he do? He goes and reestablishes Ish-bosheth. From his perspective as a loyal servant to David, then essentially Avner is the epitome of the Mored B'Malchus. He's the one who's rebelling against the true Malchus, which he believes is David. So he believes that he has a moral responsibility to remove Avner. Is that interesting? So this is from his own perspective. He's still doing a very dangerous thing, but nonetheless he gives it. Yes, Dina?
But that is really true for any of them, for Yoav and for Abishai. It's true for all of them.
Right.
Why would it be only him?
Right, you're right. You're right. I think his...
And to prove it,
yes.
I think, look what it says, the Pasuk Kaf, it says, Vayifen Avner Achara, Vayomer Ata Ze Asael, Vayomer Anochi. So he knows that he's Asael. Why is he talking to him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I feel that he's like, oh, you are the younger one. You are the one that...
You're not worthy of this, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems like that Asael's going out on a limb here. He certainly is doing much more than he should or could. But he is the fastest. So let's say, you know, so he feels that he might, even though his lack of strength might be made up by his speed. It could be.
He could really go against.
We're going to see lots of people who are too fast.
Killing him at the end in such a way,
yeah.
Not even face to face. He's like on the side.
Yeah. So I want to come back to the death for a second over here, and just to appreciate what's really going on over here. You see, why? What's this business with the fifth? So. The Gemara tells us a very interesting thing. This is going to be—we're going to remember this rib, unfortunately. This is going to come back to haunt us. The Gemara tells us. Let's take a look at 14 just to appreciate what he's doing here, and now the power that Avner wields. In the 14th source, he says, "Ladaber itoy b'sheli." It's Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Al Iske b'shel sheloi. What vayakeu asham? That's actually a previous conversation. Vayakeu sham el chamesh. Amar Rav Yochanan v'dofen chamishes. So he actually hits him with the butt of the spear by the chomesh. That means to say the fifth by the rib. The fifth rib where the gallbladder and the liver hang. Now it's interesting, if you actually look in just actually, this is not exactly that area. So just, you know, the fifth rib is actually closer to the heart and the lungs, right? So it's actually, there will be more closer to the heart and the lungs. It may be, some unfortunately suggest that this might be a euphemism for perhaps lower in the body where there's actually less bones, right? Where it's easier to perforate. Whether it mean to say, like as the Chazal say, which is sort of where the internal organs are resting, or even lower, some like people say it's about a euphemism for the groin as well, which might have been to disable him rather than to kill him. Not abundantly clear. What happens is he doesn't even, as Dean's pointing out, he doesn't even really turn around and fight him. He just does good on his threat. Now, if you're to put Avner into court for a second, let's put Avner into an imaginary courtroom and say, is Avner responsible for his crime? Is Avner responsible for killing Asael or not? Which, by the way, is going to be done in not an imaginary court very soon.
100% yes.
Is he? Why?
He's responsible.
Why?
Because I'll tell you. Because he had a conversation with him before. He's telling him. Listen, I'm going to kill you.
Right. So is Avner responsible for killing Asael then?
Yes.
But he just told him to leave him alone.
It's self-defense. Avner's self-defense.
There
is chasing
no
after him.
Because look the way he's killing him. So
this is exactly the discussion the Gemara has. The Gemara asks about the level of culpability. Because on the one hand here, we have to think about this, is that if somebody is trying to, Rachman Otzlan, kill you, then they assume a halachic category, what's called a rodef, which means a person who's pursuing you to kill. And the halacha is you're allowed to kill a rodef. However, that's not so exactly true. So take a look at source 16. We're going to skip this for a moment. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin Daf Mem Tesamul Adav, Vayetze Yoav Me'im Daviv Vayishlach Malachim Achari Avne Vayashiv Osa Bibor Asira. My Bor Asira. We're gonna come back to that. That's gonna be the next parak. Omar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana Bor Vasira Garmul Ola Avne Shiareg. We're gonna see that the pit and the Sira according to be killed. Vayetze Yoav El Toch Hashar Ledaber Itoy Besheli. On Riachanan Shadano Osa Dine Sanhedrin. Later on, Yoav is gonna take him to court. Omar Lemaitama Katle Say La Asael. He says, why do you kill Asael? Yoav is going to claim for him later. He says, Asael rodef haya. He says, well, Asael was trying to kill me, right? And I was trying to stop him killing me. So I don't know how to kill him. He says, you don't need to kill him. Just trip him up. Chop off his foot. Do something else. Hit him on the head. Knock him unconscious. Don't kill him. So he says, Lo yachilu le. He says, I couldn't. You know, it's in the heat of the moment. I'm being chased. I'm being pursued. I can't stop right now. So he says, Hashta bedovin chamishes kavantale, be'echad be'evorev lo yachaltle. He says, wait a second. You killed him in the very precise area. You knew exactly which rib or which internal organ you were cutting through when you did this. In other words, what's the Gemara saying? Gemara is saying, Avner, this was surgical. Right? Avner, you knew exactly what you were doing. If you had the ability, this is why when we see, Asael was very mistaken. He was playing with fire. Avner is one of the most formidable soldiers and warriors on the field at this point in time. He's the general of the forces of Israel, okay? When you play games with somebody like that, he is going to take care of you in one short action. So what the Gemara is saying is because he had such precision, he should have used it in another way. He should have somehow disabled him. Now, this is important because this is actually the halacha of Rodef. The halach of Rodef is you are supposed to stop a person trying to kill you, right? But if you're able to disable them, that's the first option. Not always do people have the opportunity and the strength or clarity of mind to be able to do this, but Avner did because of his military training. That's what seems to be over here, which is why the Tanakh emphasizes the way he killed him. It wasn't just, you know, he threw him into a pit and he, you know, hit him on the head. This was very, very specific as to how this happened. So this is just a very interesting perspective of what's going on over here. Very tragic.
Also, he says, he's not like, he just refused to give way to Avner.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't say that he was going to kill him, although we know that this was his intention, but he doesn't say it from the words itself.
Correct. Correct. No, you're right. You're right. He did refuse to, but in the end of the day, he killed him, and he killed him in a very specific way. So Gemara says
that's in
a humiliating way, and it's going to come back to haunt him. So now what happens? So now we've had wrestling match, we've had pursuit, now we have death. So what goes on over here? How does this escalate? So it's interesting. In the next section, this is the last section of the parak is Chof Dalet Tulam Abayz. Next, few psukim. Vayedufu Yoav Avisha Achari Avner Vashemesh Ba'or. So they're coming. His brother, the brothers Yoav and Avisha, are pursuing Avner. Obviously, they're slower than Asael. The sun is setting. Vehem Abo Ad Givat Ama Asher Al Pnei Giach Derech Midbar Givon. So they're on the way in this particular area. Vayiskabtzu Bnei Binyamin Achare Avner Vayu Al Aguda Echas Vayamdu Al Rosh Givah Echad. So everybody sort of congregates around Avner on one hilltop. Vayikra Avner El Yoav Ayomer Halal Netzach Toch El Cherev. He says, will the sword consume for eternity? If you're going to carry on this, it's going to be bad for all of us at the end. Tell the people to desist from their brothers. Stop fighting. Ki az me'abokeh na'aleh ha'am ish me'acharei achiv. He says, oh, Yoav, now you speak up. If you said that this morning, then we would have had less casualties. Right? It's all very nice that you're saying it now. Vayiska Yoav ba'shofar vayamdu kol ha'am v'lo yirdufu od acharei Yisrael v'lo yosifu v'lo yosfu od li'lachem. But nonetheless, he makes good on the promise. And Yoav blows the horn, stopping his soldiers from pursuit, thereby creating a ceasefire, essentially. V'avne v'anoshov holchu ba'aravo kol ha'lala ahu. V'yavru es ha'yarden v'holchu kol ha'bistron v'yavu machanaim. So they go, and the whole night they run. Avner returns to Machanaim, across the river. V'yoav shov me'achare Avner v'yikbots es kol ha'am v'yipokdu me'avdei David tisho asar ish v'asael. And it says that when they counted their men, David had lost 19 men and Asael. Obviously, he was very significant. He was an officer, not a private. V'avdei David hiku mibinyamin v'anshe Avner shlosh me'os v'shishim ish me'esol. So, you know, although the Tanakh didn't emphasize this before, we're talking about 360 dying on the side of Binyamin. That's a very sizable loss. V'yisu es Asael. And they carry the body of Asael and they bury him in the burial plot of his fathers in Hebron. And they also went all night till they got to dawn in Hebron. So very tragic story on both sides. You notice, of course, that the numbers over here are rather skewed, right? So you see something about the numbers. Why is that? So the Chida points out, coming back to the Chida's theme over here, he says Shlosh Me'os Yivashishim in source 15. He says Efshar Lirmoz Dechesher Tasir Esrim Shekenegdom Meisu Gam Al David Yutes Vasael Yisharu Shinmem Rameis Kize Maase Hashem Ki Malchus David Meito Yisbarach. So he has a gematria over here. So the way it works is that it is. There's 360 casualties on the side of Binyamin. There's 20 essentially casualties on the side of David. The difference is 340. And he says, Maase Hashem is Malchus Beis David Meito. How's that working? What's 340 then? Is Shame, is the name of Hashem, right? Shame is the name of Hashem. This is a Maase Shame. So he believes that the difference in the fighting is the act of God, right? And he's reading into this that even the numbers are significant. As Avner tried to use, they come back to haunt him in the sense that now they say, oh, this is an act of God, isn't it, right? To show this now really crystallizes for the servants of David that this shows that David should really be the king, ultimately. It also does show that militarily, that although David is a smaller group potentially than the group of Binyamin, nonetheless he is a very strong match. And by the way, we should appreciate the power of Yoav at this point in time. Yoav has just lost his brother, right? Yoav has just lost his brother. The only thing that could be going through his head right now is the boiling blood of anger, right? But nonetheless, he is able, even with his very sharp comments to Avner, he's able to say, let's stop. That's a very, very, that's a very strong, powerful thing. We're going to have to readdress this decision based on Yoav's actions in the next parak. So is this a peaceful action or is this a campaigning action, right? Is he doing this because we've already inflicted a lot of casualties and it's enough to stop now? Or is he saying, you're right, we don't want to kill anymore? Not so clear how calculated this is when it comes to Yoav. Yoav is going to be one of the most complex characters that we're going to meet in terms of cycles of revenge over here. He's going to also be one of the power players over here in the Avner cycle, which is a very powerful thing. Yeah.
Rabbi, so is this a proof that Hashem really did not want us to have kings?
It's a great question. It's a great question. You know, it's interesting when you look at Shmuel, right? So Shmuel's this bridge character. So he's sort of in between the Shoftim and the Melachim, right? So you'd say, okay, so, and Shmuel, by the way, was the writer of Sefer Shoftim and the writer of the first section of Sefer Shmuel. So you say, well, Shmuel, maybe we should ask your opinion. What do you think about kings? The truth is that it's not clear what Shmuel thinks about kings, because, you know, when they ask for a king, he's very disappointed in them, right? But at the same time, when he edits Shoftim, there's one refrain that keeps coming up, by Amim Bahaim, Ein Melech B'Yisrael, Isha Yashar Ben Avyaseh. In those days, there was no king, and everybody did as they wanted, which was a negative comment. That was the comment which heralded in Pesel Micha and Pelegesh Begiva and civil war and all the terrible things that came through there, which is almost like Shmuel saying, it's because there wasn't a king. So Shmuel, what do you think? So what's your political system of governance, Shmuel? And so what Rabbi Menachem Liebtag points out when analyzing this is that Shmuel is not about one system of government. Shmuel is about trust in God. Once you have trust in God, each system has its advantages and disadvantages. But if you think that the one system is going to win over the other because politically or because financially or because militarily it's better, it's doomed. They all have their problems, right? Shoftim has a problem because of continuity. Although you have a meritocracy in the sense of who rises to the top, but that isn't continued to the next generation. Kings, you have a legacy, you have dynasty, right? So you have one generation after the next, but then complicated, right? It's not so simple when you have this. It's a much more complex issue than one will call it a system of governance. So what I think is probably best to hold here, just because this is a natural stopping place. And what we'll do is we'll start Perek Gimel next time and the follow-up of this unfortunate murder.